Police say there's been a sudden increase in gang violence around the region. Rival gangs battling over street corners in the Central District, Rainier Beach. Tacoma is also struggling with a major surge in gang activity. What's behind the rise in gang violence in our region? Who's joining gangs? Why? And what solutions out there are trying to reach young people to help them? In the studios with us, Gabriel Morales trains law enforcement officials to prevent gang violence. He also works directly with youth at risk. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Dennis Turner works with youth to prevent gang violence in Pierce County with Project SAFE, a whole systems approach. He's a former gang member. Dennis Turner, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Rico Leslie also works with Project SAFE. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And Lieutenant Eric Sano is the commander of the Robbery Fugitive Gang Unit for Seattle Police Department. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So you're quoted in the PI. There's definitely an increase in gang activity and drive-bys. He called the root of the violence. You called the root of the violence, Lieutenant Eric Sano, a turf war.
Yes.
What's going on?
Well, what we're seeing is a lot of these young kids trying to make a name for themselves up here in the Seattle area, at least. We've had what we call our OGs, original gangsters, old gangsters, who are coming out, who've been back in the mid to late 80s, who got these sentences of 20 years getting out and trying to reestablish their own turf. But these young kids are just not willing to give up their piece of the territory, so to speak.
So you have young 20-year-olds and or younger, 40-year-olds, and they're battling over what they had originally. They probably
yes.
had all worked together, or probably they were their sons and,
exactly.
and cousins and
mm-hmm.
brothers, huh? Who are the gangs? I know there's a lot, so.
Well, there are different, you know, you have your main gangs like the Crips, Bloods, BGDs, but within those gangs you have different sets, okay? And then you have these hybrid gangs, too, that are coming out where you have Bloods and BGDs kind of commingling into this group called the LP or low profile. It's very difficult to track a lot of these because they sometimes jump from set to set depending on who's got the power.
Dennis Turner, let me ask you, first of all, is there a connection between Seattle and Tacoma gangs?
Yes, there is.
And what is the connection?
Depending on, it could be on money, it could be on drugs, it could be on territory, what their common goal is. I'll give you an example. 7-4 Hoover Crip Gang is originally from Seattle. It's not a Tacoma-based gang. They've come down to Tacoma and started their own faction of 7-4 Hoover. So
why a resurgence in violence? Do you agree with Tennessee? Is this young people and old people?
Yeah, I do agree with that. I think, you know, the younger guys do want to make a name for themselves, so they are going to commit violent acts. And part of it is there's no punishment necessarily for younger people either.
Because they're minors, they won't go to prison.
Correct.
And Rico Leslie, what's your thoughts?
Well, it's the same thing.
Violence.
Yeah, it's a surge. Once again, it's a turf war, but at the same time, it's the new generation, the third generation from the influx from OGs, which is original gangsters from back in the days, and now some of us had grown up, such as myself, and now that I am a dropout from the gangs from Compton area and Long Beach area. You got young people growing up and want to be harder than the OGs. They want to represent a gang, and they want to be known. So they're going out here flexing their muscles, so to speak, and using whatever tools they have available to them, which would be guns and drugs and et cetera.
Gabriel Morales, this is a larger question for after the break, but just in a short question, a resurgence in violence. So whatever lessons were learned in the late 90s and early 2000 didn't stick if there were any, I guess.
Well, gangs have always been around since the beginning of time. That's one thing sometimes people have a misnotion about, that gangs are something new. They've been around in this country since the 1820s. If you saw the movie Gangs in New York, that's a perfect example. And they've been here in Seattle also for many years. You had the Asian Tongs down in Chinatown. It was called Chinatown then, not the International District. You had your biker gangs from the 1950s. So this is not really a new problem, but what has happened is the violence goes up and down. And sometimes when the violence goes down due to budget cuts or politics, whatever, police gang units get cut or shifted around. And oftentimes then there's a lull in the violence for a variety of reasons, economics, turf wars.
Is that what you think happened this last time? Was it economics? Were there better jobs? And so
in my opinion, during the 1990s, everybody was making money. So during the 1980s, things were a little tough. The California gangs were coming up and bumping heads with a lot of our kids that grew up in the projects from some pretty tough neighborhoods. These kids weren't no pushovers, and so there was some tension between California guys and Washington homeboys. You had Crips, Bloods, BGDs coming in from different areas. You also had your homegrown sets. But they were fighting over drug territory and power during the 1980s. During the 1990s, in my opinion, what I saw and what I've heard from thousands of interviews with these guys is everybody was making money. So you had a Crip on one corner, a Blood on one corner, a BGD on one corner, a Sewer 13 on one corner, and they're all making money. Now, in the last few years, economics is getting it's getting rougher again for a lot of these guys. Layoffs at Boeing, Microsoft, other companies who are, middle-class Americans consume a lot of drugs in this country. The local kids from the projects, they're only dealing in consuming small amounts compared to the vast parts of society.
Let me hold you there. I'll come back and let you finish. It's about capitalism. We're talking about drugs on weekday and about gangs and gang warfare and solutions. That's ahead.
My name is Mike, and I'm from High Point. I was growing up, it was pretty hard. My mom was in the streets with my dad. My dad was in a gang, too. He used to sell drugs and, do the things that when I was a little younger, I seen the stuff he was doing, and I really wanted to do it. I seen all the money my mom and him was having and all the nice clothes and stuff that I was getting for school. So I was about 9 years old, and my older brothers was doing it. So I asked them if I can do it, too. They wouldn't let me, so I had to go out and steal stuff to get the money for the stuff. And then after I started making enough money for myself, they let me get on the gang. I was about 11. It was all right for the first couple years because all the money and stuff was coming in, and I was getting so much respect from people. Even little kids wanted to be like me because they were seeing the stuff I had, and I really enjoyed it. And then about I was like 15, I was walking through High Point, and I got shot in my leg twice. And after that, I still wanted to be in the streets. Because I felt like I had to retaliate and get the people that got me caught selling. Went to jail for a year and a half, almost 2 years. Got out, had a daughter. A year later, had a son. My daughter's one, and my son's 2 months old. I don't know, now I just live my life for them. I see a picture beyond the streets that I want to see me and my kids grow up. Like my dad, he's an OG, original gangster. The oldest of and the wisest of all gangsters, the one that's taught all the younger guys how to make money, get the females, what to do. You know what I'm saying? It's just, he taught me everything. If I would have stayed in it, I'd be almost an OG. Gang that I'm in right now is like mostly family, so they accepted me. They let me get out like on a pass. They gave me that respect. They gave me the pass so I can, live my life the way I want to and the positive way I can have for my kids, because I want to have things and I want to be able to see old age and see my kids have kids.
A weekday intern, Kendall Ty Lee, spoke with an ex-gang member. So that his story resonated with all of you. You were saying that's part of the problem. It's hard to compete with the...
It is. It's very hard to...
Sano.
Yes. It's very hard to compete with that, to tell a young man or young woman to stay in school and get a good education, get a job, and do things the right way when they're looking at their homie making money, wearing the nice clothes, and but you got to tell them there's a downside to that too.
Yeah.
You get shot, you go into prison, but it's hard to compete. They don't think long term. They see the short-term benefits of making money and having the prestige of being a gang member. You heard how he adored his father, who was OG. That's that whole gang subculture, and you got movies that glorify it. You got music that glorifies the gang lifestyle.
Gabriel Morales, you said High Point was your neighborhood too.
Yes, I saw similar things in High Point when I was growing up, and I've seen it change. I said gangs have been around for a long time, but what we've seen is there's more gangs. It's no longer just in the projects anymore or just in low-income areas. We actually see kids now out in suburbs now that are joining gangs. Kent, Auburn, Federal Way, SeaTac. These are some of the fastest-growing areas for gang members, right?
Same economic and the same cultural affiliations?
Well, you have now, the gang lifestyle has been glamorized in movies, TV, MTV. We have, lately in the news, there's been a lot of talk about MySpace.com. It's really like a free commercial for a gang member.
Yeah.
This is who I am, this is what I represent, and here's how you can get a hold of me.
Yeah.
And, the one thing that I
agree, you know, just for myself, I didn't come from a poor neighborhood, just to let you know. I didn't grow up poor. I grew up a privilege, and I was a gangster.
How did you get involved?
My cousins, my family members.
They just said,
no,
without hanging out with us?
No, they did beef in the streets, or they caused trouble in the streets. And, you know, people don't tell that in the gangster lifestyle, if they can't get a hold of them gang members, they're going to go after the family members. And they came after me, because I went back, and I went and told them. And my cousins, you know, twisted the story. They said, you know, that he sent us out here to get you. And so now I got to protect myself. So I didn't come from a poor background. I didn't come, you know, I had all the things that you can have in a family. And I was a gang member. But, you know, that's what's happening. These suburb kids of rich neighborhoods and all have privilege are gang members. And parents are blind.
Parents are blind. They don't see it.
Yeah, parents are blind. We go to parents' homes all the time and do assessments. And parents are like, my kid's not a gang member. We look at their, why do they have padlocks on their doors? You know, why do they have this gang writing on their books? What, you know, give me a crowbar so I can break open this door. Well, it's their room. I don't care. Break open the door. You know, they got dope guns and all this gang stuff on their wall. And they're in shock. Like, they didn't know.
These parents nowadays, when we do assessment, we talk with them and let them know that, you know, you have to pay attention to your kid, because your kids, you know, we tell parents, your kid is not going to come up to you and tell you that I'm getting pressured by the homeboys in the neighborhood, or I'm getting pressured by the dope man and he's giving me $200 or $300 just to stand at a spot. They're not going to tell you that. But if you see that your kid is making a change from the good to the bad, the kid really wants you to, you know, ask them. They're not going to come up to you and tell you, look, mom, dad, I need you to, you know, counsel me and tell me something about street life.
Have you found that? Have you had that experience, a kid that did that if they didn't come to their parents?
Well,
came up to you?
When I was working at Lakewood Y late nights, we did the late nights over there. One night, a young man, he came up to me because I built the rapport with our young people, and he came up to me, pulled me to the side, hey, Brother Rico, you know, dude got a gun in the locker room, man, something's going to happen. And at least he came to me. You know why he came to me? Because I'm down to his level. I'm an OG. I've been there. So he'd rather come to me rather than to the guy behind the desk that has a suit and tie or doesn't really can collaborate with him and doesn't talk that level. So he come to me and told me, guess what I have to do? I have to shut the little Lakewood down early. 9:30, we're shutting it down. You guys, why? Because we got a problem.
So what's you said that you both do whole systems approach. All of you do. Let me go around the table and just give me an example of ways. We just got one from Rico Leslie, of ways reaching people that doesn't involve the end product, which is people going to jail.
Project Save itself is just a whole program with two other collaborators. Collaborative partners. One is Multicultural Solutions El Camino, which is drug and alcohol for Hispanic and in English. You know, a lot of gang members do drugs, and they do need to get off those drugs, so they need some way to do that. And then the other thing, we have Restoration Family Counseling, who does the therapeutic portion for us, that does therapy. You know, whether it's family therapy or individual therapy, you know, there's a lot of issues that do go on in their lives, and they do need someone to talk to. So we also use those measures also to do our work, besides just the outreach work, us going into the community, get to the kids, give them services, get them to job programs, you know, stand up for them, you know, be their voice when they sometimes can't be the voice for their own selves.
Another misconception a lot of people have is that all gang members are the same. They're not. They come, like I said, from all races, classes, economic levels. You have certain hardcore gang members that unfortunately are going to probably learn the hard way, and that means going to jail or prison. But you have a lot of kids that are just looking for a way out. They're not sure how they got in. They didn't join a gang overnight, and they don't know how to get out of it overnight. So it's a slow process to kind of wean them away from that and let them see that there is alternatives to the gang lifestyle. One thing that I use a lot in intervention work is the holistic approach, mind, body, and spirit. You got to take care of the mind, and that means education. You got to go to school, or you're not going to be able to get a decent paying job. You also have to take care of the spirit, and that can be religion for some people, for any kind of belief system, in where you're going, some kind of goals. And then you got to take care of the body, and that also means the family, not just you personally, but the extended family. Yeah. Like a lot of these brothers said, a lot of times it's not just the gang. Sometimes the family is the gang. How do you just get rid of your whole family? That's real hard for a lot of these youngsters to do. So you gotta deal with it as a whole, the whole family unit, the household, and then hopefully get people some help that want help. Mm-hmm.
Let me play a tape that we had our intern Kendall Ty Lee visited the Delridge Community Center. She spoke to two young men who had just returned from the funeral of Sophia's son, a victim in last Thursday's Skyway Bowl shootings.
My name is Aghazi Alam. I grew up in High Point. I'm from West Seattle. I just turned 21 years old.
My name is Serge Hanjayan, and I went to Franklin High School. I grew up in West Seattle and High Point also.
The untimely death of my friend is what brings us all together at this particular moment, what we have to grow up on. And as we were raised as kids, we just learn through things like this and different scenarios of this situation. So it's like we're used to it, which is not a good thing, but it's like something where we are kind of like able to like just go through on a regular day basis.
I do know that I lost a family, you know, member like we were talking earlier, and we don't consider any of us that grew up together friends, you know. We're close like brothers, you know. We would be at each other's house, you know. I could just remember him being so innocent, just, you know, going over to his house and playing hide and go seek. We'd be playing baseball. But, you know, there's this double-edged sword that, you know, you grow up and you have all these memories, but in the end they catch up to you. It's like you have this mentality that's always with you, that you have to be hard and that you have to be defensive at all times. And I'm wondering, why am I so negative? And it's only because that's the way I was taught, like I hate to say that, that's the way you had to be when you were here. Like, you have to put on this defense mechanism, you know, to show people that, you know, you're masculine, like you have this attribute about you that you can defend yourself if anything went down. It's like you can't show any love.
I think it started when we were little. It's like, you know, you're not necessarily the person that you were brought up to be, because when you're little in an environment of this capacity, you just understand different situations of life and you adapt to certain situations which normal kids don't understand, but we understand. And it's like we have to be okay with it when it's not really supposed to be there. You know what I'm saying? You see bad things happen, you see all your friends go a certain direction and you go a certain direction, most bad and none good. You know what I'm saying? There's only a couple of scenarios where individuals really make it in this type of atmosphere. You know what I'm saying?
It's glamorized, the violence and the masculinity and just being hard and defensive, you know, that's really glamorized in the neighborhood that we grew up in.
Since we grew up and now we're young men and we're in our early 20s and 19s and 20s and 21s, it's been getting worse and worse. I've been to more funerals in the last 2.5 years than I've been through my whole life. And I've seen their bodies, and these are individuals that I know since the age of 4 or 5 years old. Am I lucky, or what's going on here?
I don't think it's violence increasing. I just think that it's not going away.
Kendall Ty Lee, our intern, spoke with some of these two young men at the Delridge Community Center. Lieutenant Eric Sano is a commander with the Robbery Fugitive Gang Unit for Seattle Police. Gabriel Morales trains law enforcement officials to prevent gang violence. He also works directly with young people at risk. Dennis Turner works with youth to prevent gang violence in Pierce County, a former gang member. He's with Project Safe, as is Rico Leslie. They take a whole systems approach to this issue. Rico Leslie, you said that you go to schools and you talk to teachers. So you ask them, well, tell me what you said.
Well, usually we go into the school where I ask to do. I'm a motivational speaker. I speak about my life, where I've been in my life. And 9 times out of 10, what I throw out to the young people is, we'll say, well, you know, out of all of you guys in here, just curiosity. Just, you guys got any gang members or in your family, your brothers or sisters, your dads? And the whole class will raise their hand, and the teacher's jaws will drop to the ground. And we look at them. They'll just be like, what do we do? And we're telling them, we're here to do intervention. And so what happens, once we figure out, decipher that, and figure out, okay, now we're dealing with a bunch of kids that are surrounded by this, but they're looking for a way out, and we give them a way out. And usually there's a small sticky note situation I use with the kids, and I use the sticky notes, and I tell the kids, look, your teachers give you sticky notes, you know, for what? Yeah, to get, tell me this, to do that. Well, I said, tell you what, I'm going to show you guys how to be heroes in somebody's life today. And I empower them, let them know you can be a hero to your moms, whether your mom or your dad's an alcoholic or druggie or just angry, or your big brother who's gangbanging out on the street staying out late, or your sister, either or, it doesn't matter. I said, take your sticky notes and write a note to your mom or your dad, whoever it is. I love you. I hate when you stay out late, brother. Come home and stick it on the door, in the room door, their car window. I said, and you might see it in the morning, crumbled up and on the floor, but I guarantee you they read it. And after we did that the first time at McCarver, was it McCarver, Turner?
Oh, McKinley.
McKinley. The young people, we received over close to 100 letters from them through the teacher's approval, and we received these letters in our P.O. box, and the kids telling us what they did, and they did this sticking on. They said, thank you. And if you guys want to came to our school summertime, I was going to join a gang. Different stories we got in all these letters. This is where you reach them at that level, fourth and fifth grade level.
So when you talk about prevention, that gets to your story and to your story. So, Gabriel Morales, you had a brother who was in a gang. How old were you?
Well, when I was running the streets, it was pretty much from my teenage years till I was about 21. And my younger brother shot a guy in the head here in Seattle, ended up going to Maple Lane, did a lot of time in DLC, King County Jail, for about 20 years. And once again, his life kind of changed around when he ended up having a daughter. And he felt guilty about being locked up and running the streets when his daughter was there, and didn't want to be that kind of father to her.
But you avoided being drawn in part because you had Mecha, you had mural work, you did folk dancing.
Correct. I was in a program called Proyecto Silver, which is a very a good program in the Seattle Public Schools, Chief South High School. And that was a great intervention program. It's a dropout prevention program for me, and it worked for me. It helped give me some guidance. I had some really good mentors and counselors in there. And we need those kind of programs. We do need to put the money where it's needed.
You wrote on your website that with violence all around me, I escaped by joining the Marine Corps. So that for you was an escape and a way to...
Well, yes. For me, joining the military was a way out. I had there was actually a drive-by shooting on Beacon Hill, October 18th, 1981, and I had some gang members from Southern California tried to attempt to kill me, not once, not twice, but three times, and I came very, very close to joining a gang myself
for protection,
out of fear of being killed or hurt really bad, and that happens to a lot of kids. I think they come to those kind of choices that they're facing, if they don't see other alternatives, I'm not recommending the Marine Corps for everybody, but for me, that was it. For some kids, it's sports scholarship. It may be an educational scholarship. There's various ways you can get out, but people have to older people have to help show those choices to young people.
So, Rico Leslie, you're from California.
Yes, I'm
from California. So, what was your trajectory?
Well, you know, my thing was, unfortunately, I wasn't in the same shoe Morales was, but we still crossed the same paths. And I was in a position as well, you know, where my mom brought us up five boys and one girl, and she did her best. But at the same time, I was drawn into the lifestyle of gangster mentality, fast, like the young men were saying, selling drugs. I got caught up in the money thing. If I can make $3,000 a day, I'm happy. It's money in my pocket. I can go buy me some clothes and jewelry and have it going on and have a lowrider and rolling down the street. Back in the days in Cali, in Wilmington, California, we used to drive cars with Daytons on it, and they call them dead men wheel. But I end up getting caught up. I end up doing a drive-by shooting and end up getting caught in that and end up going to prison for that. I end up doing 8 years. At the same time, my so-called homeboy end up turning on me and telling all the evidence on me. And that's how it goes down sometimes. Some people don't realize that. Gangsters ain't gonna tell you that this is what comes with the territory. This is what's gonna happen, man. And it ain't we're gonna tell on you, or they're gonna tell on you. They don't tell you that. When you get locked up and you're looking at 25 life, it all changes. And I was at one point, I was on my knees in the Compton's cell praying. You know, 25 life broke me down. Like I'm not going out like that. So I had to wake up. And then at the same time, while I was in there, I was Hall of Justice Jail, the old jail in L.A. County. And at the same time, in 84-85, my little baby brother got killed. He was only 13 and a half, 14 for $50. And I had to wake up a little bit, even though I still had to go through the system a few more times. But I had to wake up. So I escaped that because I made a decision. I made a choice to walk away from that.
Rico Leslie, Dennis Turner, Gabriel Morales, Lieutenant Eric Sano, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is KUOW.